Similar to a well-tuned automobile, a guitar requires the same level of attention to perform at its very best. No matter how expensive your guitar may be, we will treat you and your instrument with the utmost respect. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson, we love guitars. Welcome to another podcast. It's sliceoffice.com, brought to you by our friends at Madison Computer Works. Joining us now, John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. So, John, before we get to the whole notion of the Mueller report, I want to play a clip from you, from Ron Johnson, Senator Ron Johnson, who was on the Upfront program over the weekend. You know, in 2016, when he ran for re-election, he was emphatic that he was more virtuous than Russ Feingold because he wasn't a career politician, and this would absolutely be his last term in the United States Senate because he wasn't like the rest of the swamp and wasn't a career politician. So here's Ron Johnson on Upfront yesterday.
As you said, you would retire after this term, but then I heard an interview with you recently where it sounded like you might be reconsidering that.
My intention was second and final term, but I have said this was not the reality I thought I'd face. I really thought Scott Walker would be reelected. Again, you never say never, but right now what I'm concentrating on is the next 2 years establishing a grassroots juggernaut. I think we proved the concept with the Judge Hagedorn. Nobody thought Judge Hagedorn was going to win, but you know, when I kind of got, you know, became the titular head of the party, we focused immediately on the grassroots, energized, you know, the county chairs, energized other individuals that had social connections, and that's really what I'm focusing on the next couple of years. 2022 is long term in the future.
What would
long
need time. To happen, though, for you to run again in 2022?
Again, my intention is have this be my final term. That's what I'd like to see.
Thank you.
Okay. Have a great day.
Oh, that was painful. That was awful. That's like Scott Walker saying, you know, I have no intention to go after labor unions. Whenever that must be the code, right? When they use the word
intention.
Yeah, when intention comes in and they say, my intention is never, that should probably be translated directly, and just to be clear here, so we're no hyperbole, that should be translated as, I am lying to you right now, and I am lying aggressively with the intent that you no longer ask any questions about this topic, because if you do, I'm going to have to lie to you again.
Well, you know, I think I had heard in December that he wanted to run for governor. And I think he's in a quandary now because I think Scott Walker wants to run for governor. And I think he's playing a little game of chicken with Scott Walker. I also think he's trying, while Walker is running around giving speeches, I think he's making a power move on Walker. What do you think?
Well, I think they all are, right? The Sensenbrenner thing, you have people who have been following this.
Yeah, but Jim Sensenbrenner's not angling to run for statewide office.
Better disinvited Walker for
right.
something. Or
right.
They disinvited Walker, his allies did. And
I like how Johnson took credit for the Hagedorn win, too.
Yeah, well, yeah. There you go. But I like that Johnson knows the word titular. that's, you know, people can learn. And this is the interesting thing. 2022 in Wisconsin, a long way off, and we shouldn't over-discuss it today, but, I mean, that's going to be the critical point, right? Republicans got their teeth handed to them in 2018. Every race that wasn't rigged, basically, and that's, of course, the gerrymandering in the legislature, but every race that was a real race, the Democrats won, but they didn't win by much, right? This was, you know, except for Tammy Baldwin and Doug LaFollette, the wins at the statewide level were relatively close. And so our Republican friends see, you know, a lot of real chances in 2022. The Hagedorn race, which is being radically misread by a lot of folks, but that doesn't matter. They still see that as encouragement for what they seek to do. And so, yeah. My sense is that Johnson and Walker both want to make a play in 2022. Now, that will be influenced by a whole bunch of factors. Remember, if a Democratic president is elected in 2020, Republicans are going to do well in 2022 in Wisconsin. right? Because this is a countercyclical state.
Right.
We know this to be true.
It's all about who gets fired up.
Right. But it's also about, it's that I actually think there's a genuine, you know, kind of pushback against Washington, you know, kind of old school populist sentiment that sort of flows through the politics of Wisconsin.
Well, it's a little interesting to watch because there's two things going on in Wisconsin right now. Some of the parts of the state are becoming bluer, and some of them are becoming redder. And it's happening simultaneously.
Absolutely. And it's also happening based on 21st century politics at a time when a lot of people are still practicing 20th century politics or even 19th.
Right. Now let's get back to Ron Johnson being a liar.
Yeah.
Here's a guy that denigrated Russ Feingold's service. He even mocked Russ Feingold's service in Africa.
He
thought he was on a field trip visiting, sightseeing the jungles with gorillas. I'm not kidding. He mocked, right? So he mocked someone who genuinely was a public servant. And Ron Johnson has become the ultimate politician.
He was a hack politician the day he started. No, I mean, Ron Johnson, this is the problem that people have, right? You know, if you call somebody a political careerist, right, folks say, oh, yeah, no, you can't say that because he's only been in politics for, you know, a couple years. Wrong. It's like people who don't know the basics of the English language. A political careerist doesn't mean that you have been in office for 50 years. What it means is that you intend to have a political career, that your everything you do is about, you know, advancing yourself politically. Now, it happened. Russ Feingold did serve in office for quite a bit of time, the state Senate and then the U.S. Senate. However, almost everything Russ Feingold did appeared, at the time at least, to be about undermining his political career, right? He voted against the Patriot Act. He cast very courageous anti-war votes. Going back into the 90s, he took on Bill Clinton on trade, war and peace, and things like banking reform and bankruptcy reform. I mean, this is a guy with Russ Feingold who took on his own party and took on the other party and took on politics, you know, basically as it operates. That's a public servant, right? Ron Johnson? Literally, if Mitch McConnell burps, Ron Johnson says, excuse me.
All right. So, the Mueller report. Ken Delanian from NBC, I thought, put it very well last night on Casey Hunt's KCDC show, putting the Russian part in perspective. This is Ken Delanian.
I agree with you, Casey, that it has not. I've been thinking about this a lot in the past few days. As it turned out, we didn't so much need a prosecutor looking at these matters as we needed more of an inspector general. Somebody, some figure who could actually explore conduct short of crimes and explain what it means. So you have a lot of new information in this report, particularly on the collusion side, which I've been spending my time going through, because what Mueller really showed is that not only did the Russians try to help Trump get elected, but that the Trump campaign was willing to accept that help, knew that they were benefiting from stolen Russian information, happy to do that. And then after the election, the Russian government swarmed the Trump transition team with proposals, sanctions relief, reconciliation. That back channel meeting in the Seychelles produces a document that finds its way to Jared Kushner, who hands it to Rex Tillerson. And you could argue that the only reason they didn't go through with lifting sanctions and completely setting the table with Russia is the backlash from the bureaucracy and the media. So there was, by a lot of standards, a lot of wrongdoing here, but not a criminal conspiracy. The problem that I'm having is Robert Mueller and his team did not pass any judgment on this conduct whatsoever. And they may have done it in a classified counterintelligence setting. We can talk more about what that means later. But so we're left with this very unsatisfactory outcome where many Democrats, many middle-of-the-road people look at this and say, this is a damning report. But then Rudy Giuliani goes on television and says, there's nothing wrong with taking information from a foreign government. And Mueller didn't contradict him in this report. And that's the very unsatisfying conclusion at which we find ourselves, although I think there is room to move this ball forward as Mueller comes to testify on the Hill and as Congress continues to sift through this information.
He nailed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty well. The only variation I'd offer on it is that I think if you understand the basics of the law, as it relates to constitutional governance, this all becomes a lot clearer, right? And that's the one addition I would make. Some of our Republican friends, those who are sort of knee-jerk defenders of Donald Trump, will rush forward and say, well, you know, Mueller didn't point to a crime, right? Or he didn't charge a crime, so everything's good. No, I mean, the Mueller report is an impeachment referral. It's as simple as that. And it needs to be understood as such.
And this is the distinction in, you know, when you criminalize something as far as charging something as a crime per se is different than charging someone with malfeasance and impeachment as far as a blatant disregard for the country's interests.
Because the founders explicitly did not want to criminalize service, right? That doesn't mean that a president can't commit a crime. And if a president commits a crime, that president shouldn't be charged. Founders didn't want a king for 4 years. They didn't want an elected despot. So the people run around and say,
tell that to Alan Dershowitz.
I know, Alan Dershowitz, good heavens. And, you know, more power to the young man. But when he learns a little more about the Constitution of the United States, what he will learn is that the intent was that presidents would not be monarchical. And so, yes, of course you can have reasonable levels of accountability and prosecution on the legal side toward a president. But much more importantly, right, is this area of abuse of office. That's what they feared, right? And one of the reasons that they didn't criminalize, they didn't create a criminal structure for it, was because they did not want it to have to come to a point where presidents who were abusing their positions would be standing in court in front of a jury, right? Because that would, in fact, you know, have all the concerns and all the frustrations that go with it. What they wanted was an ability for the Congress of the United States, especially the House of Representatives, most regularly elected, closest to the people. This was a very careful construct. The people, the folks who were in a position of power who had the most connection to the great mass of American people, had the power to impeach the president. And the reason for that is they wanted a civil, right, and a constitutional model for how to deal with an abusive president. What has happened with the Mueller report, and again, so few people pay any attention to the Constitution of the United States. It's like the most talked about and unread document ever. It's such a simple construct. Mueller said, it's up to Congress. And he gives them all this information. Now, of course, Barr redacts all sorts of things. So it's like literally watching a movie and, right, you know, when the door opens, the movie goes, you know, but, you know.
It's kind of like the ending of The Sopranos.
There's so many efforts on the part of, and what an apropos comparison. There's so many efforts on the part of Barr to protect Trump. And yet, even with that, it's very clear where we're at now.
Well, you've been saying this, though. I think the point Delanian was making was that too much hope was put in the Mueller report.
Right.
That we should have framed this in a way. This isn't about convicting Donald Trump of crimes, because that probably wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
But look, this isn't static. Donald Trump right now is ignoring the advice of his entire national security team in dealing with Russia, and we have another election coming up, and tick tock, this stuff continues. We have a president who I think right now is not actively protecting the interests of the United States.
Well, and let's say you're wrong, which we've done many times. But let's say you're wrong. Let's say that as regards Russia, none of this matters. Totally inconsequential, right? Throw it all aside. I don't happen to believe that. I think there are some interesting things in here. But let's say that all, we'll put that all aside. The fact that someone who has sworn an oath to defend, protect the Constitution, bear, you know, true faith to that, right, abused his office because, as Barr. We now have actually some very, very powerful evidence in if you actually had a constitutional state and you were actually serious about issues of presidential accountability. We actually now have powerful evidence from the Attorney General of the United States that Trump was abusing his office, because Barr said that, what was it? He was scared. He felt, you know, pressured and intimidated and stuff like that. So somehow that's why he obstructed justice.
That was the most infantile defense I've ever seen in my life.
But you understand, I would say that I'd put that right in the articles of impeachment. This is a guy acting in his own personal interest based on his own fears, right? Well, you see, the thing is, when you become president of the United States, the one thing we demand is that you don't do that.
Stand by. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation at SlysOffice.com.
I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SlysOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date. Whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SlysOffice.com.
Welcome back to SlysOffice.com, brought to you by our friends, Madison Teachers Incorporated, Madison Firefighters, Local 311, Madison Teamsters, Local 695. All right, so there are some great clips here from over the last couple days. I don't even know if I'm going to get all these in today, but let's just whip through some of these. Here's the Republicans.
Say Emmanuel Aranda.
I'll get to it.
This investigation could not have been handled in a better way.
Would you describe this as a victory for the president, the outcome that you've seen so far today?
Well, I think he has every right to feel good about what we've heard today.
Even if it wasn't flattering, if you would say, as some have said today, it told the truth. It told the truth that there was no collusion. It told the truth that there was no obstruction. And I think that's a good day for America.
No collusion, no obstruction. So I think it is pretty darn definitive when we look at the full thing and we look at the conclusions.
Again,
how could you refute anything that Jim Jordan ever says, John Nichols?
We'll have to ask.
Is there a more despicable member of Congress?
Oh, Sly. We got a guy.
Louis Gohmert?
Yeah. No. We got a guy from Iowa conspiring with, you know, nutcases. So I think that with all an extremist. So with all due respect, that competition's a very, very busy one.
Yeah, but I think that Jordan's a bigger ass as far as just nastiness.
How he dresses. The shirt sleeve thing? I don't know. But with all that said, here's the thing.
These are truly dreadful people.
Yeah, and also truly lazy. Can I point that out? Because nobody with baseline intelligence, you know, like functioning, would make those statements if they had read the report. Right? Because the report, you know, I'm sure, you know, they're like, all right, let's look at a box that says he's clear, you know, so I'm going to go out and make this statement, right? I mean, the report is so damning. And so, you know, clear in saying, you know, we're leaving this to Congress, but it's not like we're saying we're leaving this to Congress because we got no idea what matters and what doesn't. In fact, when they say we're leaving this to Congress, it's actually in the context of laying out, you know, 10 examples of obstruction, of, you know, scoping out all sorts of concerns about interference with our election processes. And whether that, this is an important thing, you know, whether that goes directly to Donald Trump on the, you know, the Russia stuff, you can have your debate about that. But that's where, you know, Congress ought to debate it, right? You know, and the second part, the, you know, what I would argue is the far more consequential part, the obstruction stuff. Well, there you don't have to have much of a debate, Sly.
No, it's kind of all there.
He wanted to fire the guy doing the report.
Here is Adam Schiff yesterday.
Other than saying ample evidence, you once described to me on this program that the Trump administration's actions related to the Russia probe are, quote, of a size and scope probably beyond Watergate. What do you say now?
Well, I think it's clear from the Mueller report that that's exactly right.
The obstruction of justice in particular in this case is far worse than anything that Richard Nixon did. The break-in by the Russians of the democratic institutions, a foreign adversary, far more significant than the plumbers breaking into the democratic headquarters. So yes, I would say in every way this is more significant than Watergate. And the fact that a candidate for president and now a president of the United States would not only not stand up and resist Russian interference in our election, but would welcome it, goes well beyond anything Nixon did. The fact that the President of the United States would take Putin's side over his own intelligence agencies go well beyond anything Richard Nixon did. So, yes, I think it is far more serious than Watergate.
On obstruction of justice, based on the information in the report, do you believe the president did obstruct justice?
I do believe that he obstructed justice and did so in many ways. And I think that the Mueller report points out how the elements of obstruction are met in several instances, several courses of the president's conduct. What Bob Mueller said, and this is obviously directly contrary to what Bill Barr represented to the country, is that he felt bound by the Office of Legal Counsel opinion that he could not indict a sitting president. Now, Kellyanne Conway points to that as proof of innocence, but it's not. Bob Mueller.
All right. So he said that. And yesterday, a lot of people were twisting and turning about impeachment because Elizabeth Warren laid down the gauntlet on this. Nancy Pelosi's obviously in a difficult situation. You probably don't view it as a difficult situation.
Not at all.
Yeah, you've always loved this method. I mean, this is like you're a big fan of impeachment. Right? You wanted to impeach George W. Bush.
Oh, yeah.
But does impeachment even make any sense anymore? Because we don't. I mean, you're living in a world where we have a great democracy with patriots from both sides representing the country. We don't. We literally have people that are frightened of the base that they built and are intransigent. They're certainly not willing to, you know, follow the Constitution. What's the point?
No, I understand your question, but of course this was Jefferson with his great quote about the Tree of Liberty. You know, Jefferson, when he's talking about watering it every 20 years or so with the blood of patriots, wasn't literally suggesting war, right? In fact, if you read Jefferson's writings at that time, what he was talking about is that the experiment that they began 1776, and then brought to some, you know, somewhat greater realization in 1787, wasn't going to run on itself. It had to be constantly renewed and extended and made better. And of course, that was through amendments to the Constitution, addressing many of the failings of the founders. And remember, the founders of the American experiment often understood their own failings. I mean, these were people who were flawed men. Who were acting in a time, but that tried to set up a system that would work over time. And one of the things is about impeachment, why it is such a very, very good instrument of the Constitution, is because it does force a national debate. It forces people to go back to actually reading the Constitution, to thinking about the system of checks and balances, and are you right that we're in a horrible situation? Yes, we are. So I invite you to, and this is where I think Adam Schiff was actually wrong in some of what he said, I invite you to go back to the early 70s and think about what was going on right then. We were just literally coming out of a segregation crisis battle. People were being, in the 60s, were killed, and there was striking levels of violence. We had an American apartheid in the South, which this country was seeing off, and having seen it off, right, to, you know, legally, you had violent attacks on school buses full of kids trying to just, you know, do some integration in the schools. We still had the lingering Vietnam War. We did have, you know, incredible levels of upheaval on our campuses and all sorts of places like that. And then we had the 1972 election, which Richard Nixon personally and actively engaged in trying to, you know, warp, undermine, structurally assault in all sorts of ways. And so that was a big deal, right? And he was reelected. not elected in the narrow way that Trump was, but reelected, you know, with a stunning level of support, winning most states across the country. And then at that point, reasonable people had to stand up and say, this man has abused his office and needs to be removed.
Only because the idiot taped himself.
Well,
in that respect, Donald Trump is an idiot in many ways.
Yeah.
But you notice he doesn't email?
Yeah, he knows to walk outside when you're going to talk about
it. Learned this weekend that he doesn't like it when lawyers take notes.
Yeah. Anybody likes even less knowing that Don McGahn took notes.
Oh, that's just priceless.
But what I'm saying, though, is this is the important thing to understand. The reason we harken back to Watergate is because it was actually a renewal of the American experiment in the best of ways. The reason we don't harken back to Iran-Contra is because Democrats in Congress looked at clearly impeachable offenses against not just Ronald Reagan, but George Bush, the father, and failed to act. They had hearings, right? But
yeah.
They didn't do anything.
Who was Attorney General now, for the last part of George H.W. Bush's term? I'm trying to remember.
A very bad man.
I'm sick of hearing this. Well, he was an institutionalist. He was blah, 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 blah. No, he was always a hack.
A long history of doing the wrong thing doesn't eventually give you on. No, he's the guy they call on. This is the interesting thing. And this is why a few smart people in Congress, and you know who had the best interpretation of William Barr as he was coming up, as he was coming into play, and nobody paid attention to her, because people do not pay as much attention to her as they should. She's the, in my opinion, the most important spokesperson on these issues. Elizabeth Holtzman, who served on the Watergate Committee.
Oh, she's great.
She's fantastic. Yeah. You know, she wrote an essay back like in January or something. In some ways, it was longer than that even. I've got to look back on the exact date. But she wrote an essay when Barr was brought forward, right? And she said, man, you people need to pause here and take a look at who this guy is, what he does, what he has said, because this is not a person that should be anywhere near the position. And the important thing about this is that reasonable people knew what Barr was going to do, and so too did unreasonable people. Donald Trump, as you say, may not be a political mastermind, may not be perfect on everything. He's an expert on protecting himself, and he looked at Barr and said, this is my guy.
All right. A couple clips to go out with today. You tell me which is your favorite. First of all, Sarah Sanders.
I've heard from countless members of the FBI that are grateful and thankful for the president's decision. And I think that, we may have to agree to disagree. I'm sure that there are some people that are disappointed, but I've certainly heard from a large number of individuals, and that's just myself. And I don't even know that many people in the FBI.
You said now today, and I think you said again yesterday, that you personally have talked to countless FBI officials, employees, since this happened.
Correct.
I mean, really? Like, so are we talking
between like email, text messages? Like absolutely. 50? Yes.
60, 70?
We're not going to get into a numbers game. I have heard from a large number of individuals that work at the FBI that said that they're very happy with the president's decision.
All right. There's clip one. Now let's see if we get
to. Let's just hit on that one for one sec, then we can get right off it. Can you count to 60 or 70, Sly?
What's that?
Can you count to 60 or 70?
I think I can do that, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. She said, the guy goes, is it 60, 70? And she goes, we're not going to get into a
numbers game.
No. So it's like right off the bat, that's just to clarify, when someone does that, they are lying.
Well, are you kidding me? Really?
Yeah.
All right. Hopefully I have this here. I may not have this second clip, but let's try.
A candidate in the whole world in America would take information negative
from a foreign source? From a hostile foreign source?
Who says it's even illegal? There's nothing wrong with taking information from Russians.
After.
All right. Which. I can't believe
Giuliani
you went
up. Giuliani is such a joke, right? Giuliani is just a punchline. Has been, frankly, for a long time.
So Sarah Sanders says that was a slip of the tongue when she's under oath.
Yeah, again and again and again. You know, but the interesting thing about Sarah Sanders is she may yet be hearing from FBI people.
Why do you say that?
You know, at the end of the day, this administration is a cesspool, right? And people who are not good at what they do have been put into positions where they have been asked to do things that are lawless and strikingly irresponsible. And it's going to be really, really interesting when the reckoning comes. And it, all I can tell you is that Nixon got off easy, right? Because it wasn't just because of Watergate. It was because it was an intense time in our history. And they let him get on a plane and fly to California, right? All done. And then Gerald Ford came in. There was a lot of Sturm und Drang, but essentially shut it all down with a pardon. And yet even then, do you know what happened? Sly, this is an interesting thing. What happened to, I don't know, Chuck Colson and a lot of other people around Nixon?
Colson was singing the Folsom Prison Blues?
They went to jail. And so this is an important thing to understand.
I thought you'd enjoy that alliteration.
Well done. But and Johnny Cash was, I'm sure, you know, enjoying every moment of it. But this is an important thing to understand.
You realize that Richard Nixon was dumb enough to ask Johnny Cash at the White House to sing Okie from Muskogee, and Cash had to explain to him that's not his song.
Right. Yeah. Well, the other thing about that is, you understand, Johnny Cash was a smart critic of the Vietnam War who was in touch with reality. And also, boy, if you go back to the 1960s and you look at Johnny Cash's albums on treatment of Native Americans and on minorities in the United States, the fact of the matter is Nixon and other people, and to this day a lot of people don't understand, that one of the more radical people to go to the White House was Johnny Cash.
Amen. All right. Sorry, I just meant to slip that in. All right, so this is a pretty remarkable administration in that none of this is going to end when Donald Trump leaves the presidency, whether it be, you know, in 2021 or 2026 or 2025. I mean, so he's going to have to live with this for the rest of his life. He's got investigations up the yin-yang.
Yeah, it's why he definitely should run for re-election and hope that the Justice Department interpretation holds, right? I mean, look, I'll tell you this. From Trump's standpoint, right, from the Democratic standpoint, this is why impeachment's such a big deal. You know, people need to understand we're going to need a full big reckoning, you know, and that's not, it's not just about Trump. This is the kind of important thing. What Trump has done, what he is doing, is a constitutional crisis, right? And it ought to be identified as such, and obviously accountability is a way to address that crisis. But there's a deeper constitutional crisis that goes way back as regards declaration of war, as regards, you know, just the general imperial presidency. And if I can just close off on one thing, kind of lost in the history of the last week or so, is the fact that Trump vetoed the Yemen resolution. The House and the Senate voted to say that the United States should no longer be assisting Saudi Arabia in assaults on Yemen that many international observers have begun to refer to as genocidal, right? The huge famine, just an incredible crisis on the ground. And Trump vetoed that. I would argue that the most important act that Congress can do in the next week or so, I know we got all the Mueller talk and everything like that, the most important act that Congress could do would be to override that veto to reassert a system of checks and balances on war making, which does go to all the rest of this but runs so much deeper than just one president.
One more clip. Frank Figlusi yesterday talking about Trump and his faulty memory when it comes to answering questions to Mueller.
I'd urge every American to spend time reading this report in sections, and it's unfortunate that many won't. They'll get it from their polarized news sources, but the reality is we get a glimpse Casey, a little glimpse through a redaction in an appendix in the report of what the American people think of this culture of cover-up and the president's non-responses to questions. And I think Congress should look at it. In Appendix C, we see Mueller say, I tried to get an in-person interview. I told them the written responses were insufficient, and the president declined. The very next paragraph is redacted for grand jury material. And following that redaction, Mueller says, I thought about a grand jury subpoena. I knew the president would not agree to a voluntary interview. What does that tell me? I believe that redaction says that the American people sitting on that grand jury, our neighbors, people like you and me who got called to jury duty and lived with this case, said, we need to hear from the president. We're not buying this 37 times denial, 37 times I can't remember, I can't recall. Why isn't the president sitting in front of us being interviewed? That's what I think is behind that redaction, and Congress should look at that as a voice of the American people.
That is striking.
Not going to be able to say anything better than that, and actually strongly agree with it. It's why, in my opinion, the first act of Congress, and you know how much I enjoy the idea of impeachment and respect it and see it as a full instrument of the Constitution. But, you know, with all that said, I really strongly want to emphasize that this Congress has to demand the full, unredacted information, every bit of it.
One final note. Today, we're recording this on Monday, Earth Day. U.S. Senator Russ Feingold, Governor Tommy Thompson, honoring Gaylord Nelson. Thoughts? There's a big Earth Day event in Madison today.
Yeah, and I mean, this goes back to the heart of it. Earth Day was a bipartisan, united focus on addressing the environment. People say, why was Richard Nixon so good on the environment? He wasn't good on it. He was good on it because there was a universal demand to address this fundamental issue, which Gaylord Nelson from Wisconsin put on the agenda.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation. Thanks for coming to SliesOffice.com.
SliesOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.